Okay, tax efficient investing. I've just touched on the BC tax rates. It's pretty well across the board in the United States or in Washington state. How many, who's here from Washington?
You.
California? Anywhere else in the United States?
Florida.
All over, oh my goodness. Okay, that just gives me a good sense because I'll tell you, the United States, for those who are wanting to go down and do business down there, is a patchwork. You not only have to know the federal tax code, which is two volumes of this, you have to know the state tax code. And state is completely different in every single state. And I'll tell you, I am not even close to being an expert or know much about the state taxes other than Washington state I know a little bit about or something about, and the fact that you want to incorporate in two places generally, Delaware and Nevada. Thank you. I had a mind freeze there. So I'll just talk a little bit. I'm giving this just for comparison and contrast, and I'll talk on the US side of it as well. In BC, you have to know these numbers because they're very relevant. These are the top marginal personal tax rates. And they start to come into play when you're over $100,000 Canadian. Not that much. So on income, it's 44%. Capital gains, because only half the capital gains are taxable, it's 22%. And on dividends, everyone knows what dividends are? Okay. On dividends, they're preferentially treated because they've already been the income's already been taxed once, so the tax rate's only 32%. Only, I say. In the United States, for numbers, income is about 35% of the top marginal. Now, for those who want to move down to the States, it doesn't actually kick in until you're about 250 US. So it's 250 US is about 340, depending on the day, something like 340, 350. And capital gains, well, it depends on how long you hold the property. If it's less than 18 months, you're doing a quick flip or you're a day trader, unfortunately, the tax stays at 35%. If you're in California, it's again about 40%. But capital gains, the tax rate actually decreases if you hold something more than 18 months. 1 year? Thank you. Down to 20%. Dividends, there's talk about changing the tax on dividends, but currently in the United States, dividends are being taxed at the same rate as income. Okay, so it's slightly different. It's going down slightly, down to 15%. But you have to, each of these have slightly different rates, so they're very relevant in terms of where you do your investing. How many have gone to a financial planner and the financial planner says, let's talk about asset allocation? Yeah, so they go, asset allocation, great. Okay, so that's half the, probably about two-thirds of the picture. Asset allocation is a very good thing in terms of growth and a proper balance and that sort of thing appropriate to the individual. But the other side, and I'd say less than 10% of the financial advisors out there consider this, is actually allocating the assets on a tax-efficient basis. Because really, your portfolio or your investments are made up of two sides. You'll typically have your deferred income side. So in the United States, you'll have your IRA, 401k plans. Canada, you'll have your RSPs or your pension plans. And then you'll have your investment assets. Well, the benefit of having those in those tax-deferred plans is they're tax-deferred. You won't pay tax as you earn the income through there. Whereas in your hands, as you earn the income, you're going to pay tax. Now, in the tax-deferred vehicles, you're deferring the tax, but hopefully when you're young, you're in your 30s, 40s, or 50s, you'll still have another 10, 20, 30 years before you're going to collapse your tax-deferred plan. So that allows you the power of compounding to let the money grow dramatically. The first rule, and I'm sure Harv brings this to your attention when you think about it, first of all, don't buy an investment for its tax benefits. You know, a lot of people have heard about tax shelters. You gotta buy this tax shelter, it's the hottest thing since sliced bread. Don't necessarily buy that just for the tax savings. You gotta ask yourself the simple question, is it a good investment? Okay? So there are tax shelters out there. A couple years ago, people were buying clay feet that were modeled by Michelangelo. It was the weirdest thing. But you'd buy it for 10 cents on the dollar. You'd flip it off to an art institution. And of course, That got completely reassessed, and everyone had to, they were not only out of pocket for what they put into it, but they also had to pay penalties and interest and other bad things. So it was a very, very bad investment. It was a negative investment. So you have to ask yourself the question, what you're getting into, is it a good investment? Is it, first of all, within what you want to invest in, within your realm of risk and reward profile? Second, looking at the investment, you want to look at what type of income is going to come out of it. And the reason for the first slide is what's the appropriate tax rate. Now, it seems like a big analysis, but really what you want to do is you want to try to put the high tax rate income into your deferred income vehicle. That's a lot of words. What that means is you want to put things like interest and regular stream income investments into your IRAs, your 401ks, or your RSPs. So you want to put your interest type things in there, and you'd prefer to keep your capital gains and your dividends in your own hands personally. That's if you had a choice and you're taking your whole portfolio in context. So that's really what I mean when you say look at the type of income and the tax rate related to it. And that really speaks to where do you own the investments. And I'll talk a little bit about company right now. Companies, a lot of people say, well, gee, I've got all these investments. Should I incorporate a company to hold the investments? Generally speaking, both in the United States and Canada, it may not be that, it probably is not that beneficial. You don't incorporate a company just for the write-offs. Okay? The only write-offs you're going to get are accounting fees and legal fees. That's the incremental write-offs that you'll get otherwise. It's not that beneficial for you. But having said that, we'll talk a little bit about companies because there are certain cases where you will want your investments in a company. Here's an illustration of the power of compounding. So you can see that this is after 20 years, that at 9% rate of return, if you're earning interest on an after-tax basis, the power of compounding, that's just $10,000, you put it in, you earn 9% per year, you're going to have $40,000, or just slightly over $40,000 of interest. And that's what you'll have on an after-tax basis. Whereas if you have capital gains, on an after-tax basis after 20 years, that $10,000 is going to grow to almost $80,000. So you've almost doubled your money. And you didn't have to do anything different or anything smarter. All you had to do was think of where you're properly going to put it when you made the investment in the first place. Death and taxes. An evil necessity, unfortunately. And again, in the United States, you have estate taxes. Now, you do have a fairly large unitary credit down there, so depending on the size of your estate, you may not have to pay that much. But if you have a fairly large estate, say in the $2 to $3 million range, you're probably getting close to the maximum of the 45%. And it's a marginal tax rate. And does anyone understand what marginal tax rates mean? Okay. Marginal tax rates work such that the lower amounts get taxed at a certain rate, and then as you step up, you start to pay more tax. And people say, you know, gee, I don't want to work overtime on Sunday because I'm moving myself up into the next tax bracket. Well, that's malarkey. That's not right. I'll tell you why. Because even if you're moving yourself into the next tax bracket, you're still making money. Okay? So let's say you work the Sunday and you make $500. Well, even if it kicks you from a 30% to a 40% tax rate, you're still making money. The 40%, because of our tax system, is on the marginal, as I was describing. You're paying tax on the margin. So on that extra $500, you're paying the 40%. But on the old stuff, you're still paying only the 30%. You're not paying 40% across the board. So some people say, well, you know, I work Sunday overtime, and in fact, I got less pay this week or this month than I did last month. Well, that doesn't make sense. So I'm a firm believer in if you're going to make more money, just make more money. We'll deal with the tax. In Canada, we don't have a death tax, or we don't have an estate tax, sorry, but we do have a capital gains tax. And what do they tax? They tax anything that has untaxed appreciation in it. Okay, so if you have a portfolio of stocks, if you have a rental property, if you have any investments that have appreciated, well, you're going to pay tax at that 22%, on the untaxed capital gains. There are exceptions to that rule on both sides of the border. If you pass it to your spouse, there are certain rollover provisions. So either just on your deathbed, get married, or not. But if you're passing it down to the next generation, your children, grandchildren, friends, loved ones, charities, you're going to pay tax. It's the inevitable, and frankly, if you're gone, do you really worry about it? Also, for those who are in BC, we have something called probate fees, so thank God for those who live in Alberta. Because it's called a fee, it's not called a tax. And they can't call it a tax in BC because they would be breaching the Charter of Canada. But the probate fee is not inconsequential. It's 1.4% of your gross estate. Okay? $1 million, $14,000. Not a small amount. I'll give you a little hint at the end of how you can avoid that probate fee, but you have to meet certain things. U.S. estate tax, we talked about. There's some very, very creative tax advisors down in the States that can set up various things, and I can say that I'm not an expert in that as far as the ability to get out of U.S. estate taxes. Okay? So, you have to do that with your eyes wide open, and you have to do it with advanced planning. And I'll say that's the same rule in Canada. You can actually set yourself up to avoid capital gains tax and probate fees, but you can't do it with a week to go. Okay. As I said in the very beginning, singles versus home runs. If you put in place a tax plan, I'll give you an example. One client of ours had a manufacturing business. The manufacturing business had a lot of real estate in it, and probably worth $4 million. This was in the 80s. And everyone remember 1981? Actually, it was 1982, for those who are... There's a few gray hairs, like myself, and there's some younger people. But 1982 was a crash in the real estate market. You know, interest rates in 1981, 19%. The bubble kind of burst at that point, and there was a huge crash. Well, the owner of this business pulled the trigger at that time and said, not on himself, sorry, pulled the trigger on something called an estate plan. And he set in place this estate plan. We actually had talked to him about it at that time and said, you got to do this estate plan. What that did is cap his tax liability. So he didn't have to worry about, he knew exactly when he passed on what his tax liability was going to be. Then we took active steps to reduce that estate tax liability. And over the next, I think, about 7 years, before 90 came, he was basically free. So he could pass on, he's still alive, happily with us. He could pass on without an estate tax liability on something that was worth about $5 million. Okay? Now his sons, it's gone to the next generation, are going through stage two of this. So we've gone through a reasonably complex tax reorganization and said to them, you know, give us 10 years and we'll get rid of yours as well. Okay, so tax plans do not happen overnight, but give us time and we can make it happen. So now the sons who have a $10 million business, there's two of them, actually it's probably worth a bit more than that. We will certainly do our very best to eliminate that completely so that they can pass on to the next generation and the next generation. Avoiding capital gains. I've gone over that already. In terms of an estate freeze, that's probably the best way to do it. It's much beyond the scope of what I'm going to talk about today to try to go into the details of how you do that. But certainly if there are those in that position, you should seek some professional advice on that. Probate fees. That's that 1.4% fee. There are ways to get around that. And also, it accomplishes another thing of being able to basically bequest all of your assets before you're passing. So you can make your decisions as to who's going to get it. I don't know if anyone here has ever had anyone close to them pass on and then there's been a litigation related to that. I'll tell you, I've been involved in a number of situations for clients and it can be as little as $500,000. This is very sobering, not a good thing to talk about in the morning, but as little as $500,000 hits the table, and then five siblings are out there fighting, all have lawyers, and it's just an ugly, ugly situation. Fortunately, at least in Canada, unfortunately. I don't think in the States they have quite the same thing, but you can get these, you can do some creative estate planning in the States and accomplish the same thing as well. But you can set up something in BC or Canada called the Alter Ego Trust. Not for everybody. You have to be over 65 years of age, first of all, to be able to do it. But essentially, you put all of your assets into this Alter Ego Trust. There's no tax by putting it into the Alter Ego Trust. And then you specify in the trust precisely what your testamentary wishes are. So upon your passing, this is what's going to happen. And as far as the legislation is concerned right now, that is beyond the scope of litigation. So you're not going to have your hard-earned assets fought over by your kids. The last thing, and I'll tell every single one of you, if you look at your net worth, you'd be surprised. If everyone owns a house, you may have a mortgage, you own some personal effects, you have some investments. It's not unusual to be at least 100, if not a couple hundred thousand, and quickly, very quickly, you'll be a millionaire. And I'm astonished at how many millionaires out there do not have a will. Okay? Let me just see by show of hands very quietly, who does not have a will here? Yeah, okay. Not a good thing. Actually, of those who don't have a will, how many have a spouse or children? Yeah, not a good thing. I'd strongly recommend that you get some professional advice to get a will. Both in Canada and the United States, they have these do-it-yourself will kits. Everyone heard of those? In Canada, it's called the Canadian Legal, I don't know, something or other. I know a number of litigators in the estate tax field, and they love those. Those are not that well-written wills. I think if your situation is very simple, which probably three-quarters, if not all of you, have not that simple affairs with your investments, it may not be appropriate for you. Most lawyers, both sides of the border, will do a will, typically for a couple, I would think for less than $400 or $500. It's the best $400 or $500 you'll have ever spent. And make sure you update it. I was actually looking at my parents' will the other day, and I'm still going to be looked after by my aunt and uncle when my mom passes away. So I think it's time. I don't know how they'll take it, though.